Hello, this is Timmy Black, and welcome once again to another episode of The Lives of Contemporary Artists. In my last episode, if you remember that far back, we talked a bit about the popularity of figurative painting and how the artist Medusa Baalbek hates this trend for all the obvious and not so obvious reasons. Well, I can't tell you how much blowback I got from this broadcast. I mean, the emails, the tweets, the threads. You know threads. The threads. Someone even did a 40-minute video critique on YouTube and finished it off with a ritualized blowtorching of a Timmy Black effigy and turned about 24 of my very popular Timmy Black action figures into this fire pit. And by the way, if you are interested in purchasing any of these action figures or any other Timmy Black merch, I mean, we have t-shirts, we have hoodies, we have tote bags, we have backpacks, we have water bottles. Just go to my website. The stuff is very nice but expensive, but they're nice and tasteful. Anyway, in response to this unexpected outpouring of hate, I thought it would be a good idea. I thought it would be a good business idea to prolong the controversy. I mean, the traffic I've been getting, unimaginable. It's through the roof. I must have added at least 3,000 or maybe 4,000 new followers a week since then. So let's talk politics. Let's talk politics and the culture wars. You know, political art hoping to address injustice is as potent, as powerful, as potentially galvanizing as, say, if you were to respond anemically to a nasty tweet by Kevin McCarthy or Nick Fuentes. With the obvious distinction, of course, that a work of art could potentially be worth some serious money. Anyway, on the subject of art and artists who believe in that the virtue of their profession, they are obligated to earnestly address perceived injustices through polemical and tendentious artwork. I recently met a fascinating influencer who uses social media to deliver short, compressed, some might say simplified, though she probably would prefer the word reductive, little vignettes designed to retell and to reframe the story of modernism through the delicate yet angry lens of hurt and grievance. I love it. I absolutely love it. Hurt and grievance. It's a terrific formula. And as a podcast propagandist myself, I have to confess that I am kind of jealous of the success of this Bétise Métoupage. Her name is Bétise Métoupage. And she is a lovely, lovely barstool historian, a kind of Utoctubagram self-proclaimed professor who aims her barbs and her diatribes at what she calls the great white man narrative of art history. Basically, to Bétise, or tease, as she prefers to be called, basically to tease every presumably great white man in art history is almost always preceded by an even greater and deeper and certainly more diverse precedent. Take suprematism. Take the suprematism of Kazimir Malevich, those spare canvases of white squares on white backgrounds, credited with being the first non-objective paintings. Well, as Matisse Matoupage points out, when looked at with a greater sense of context and a greater sense of fairness, the resemblance, the obvious resemblance to ancient Aleutian Island sea maps is so evident that only the most stuck-up, bow-tied academic elitist would deny the derivative nature of this pioneer of this so-called Russian avant-garde. Or take another example. In Tise's keenly observed rendering, the French painter Robert Delaunay would be but a footnote, if not for his wife Sonia's earlier experiments with simultaneous contrasts and carefully measured chromatic dissonances. Or Annie Albers, who Batisse claims put her stamp on the Bauhaus way before her husband Joseph figured out how to use rulers and masking tape to make paintings. I'm telling you, Batisse Matoupage, Ortiz, is delightful and refreshing in her iconoclasm, where she repeats over and over again the old saw about how Lee Krasner's genius anticipated the lesser Jackson Pollock. She's got one terrific rant, where she claims that it was Kiki de Montparnasse who had all the great ideas, and all Man Ray had was a darkroom. And long before Christo wrapped the Reichstag, it was his bride Jean-Claude who came up with the idea of the running fence while hanging the couple's wash out on a clothesline. But my favorite piece of Batisse revisionism, by far her most outlandish yet equally plausible theory, is that Artemisia Gentileschi not only shared her father Orazio's profession, but that she actually painted all of his paintings while he was busy carousing with Caravaggio. I just love it. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Or at least it's entertaining. Now, I'm not sure if I buy into all or even most of her conclusions, but Batisse Matoupage deserves a lot of credit for opening up this conversation. She has little use for what she calls the calcified canon of Caucasian art history. She's very frank. She's very, very frank. And I think that's somewhat courageous. And speaking of Caravaggio, when Batisse confesses to being bored with him and with artists like him, Donatello and Leonardo and Michelangelo and all the rest of what she calls those dead, white, European, queer men, she opens up to scrutiny an important and yet under-examined orthodoxy. Why? Why, she asks, why does the study and the appreciation of European art concern itself so much with Europe. Now, that might be a fair point. It might not be a fair point, but it tracks well on TikTomagram, and for that alone, it deserves our inattention. And what better forum is there to examine not only subtle nuances of art history, but also to look more carefully, more thoughtfully, at the lives of contemporary artists?